You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at 1 Crown Office Row and is presented by Rosalind English.
Regulating by robot and adjudicating by algorithm are the buzz phrases used by two American academics to describe a future when much of our lives are governed by intelligent machines. Carrie Colonisi is Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of Pennsylvania, where he directs the Penn Program on Regulation. David Lear is a research fellow at the Penn Program and is currently studying at Yale Law School. They've both kindly agreed to talk to me about their research in this area and their predictions, and indeed recommendations, for a world in which legal decisions are no longer made by humans. Carrie, you say in a paper you recently published that it is no longer fanciful to envisage a future in which government agencies could effectively make law by robot. The prospect of machine learning taking over the work of government agencies and even the courts seems so extreme and even absurd to most people that it hasn't been seriously discussed. But this is the focus of your research. Could you give me an example of such a scenario, as it would astonish some people that automation could creep into such a hallowed area as the law?
Well, government has been using machine learning algorithms for quite some time now to automate very routine tasks. For example, the U.S. Postal Service uses machine learning algorithms to detect handwriting on letters and mail systems. And I think we'll see in the years ahead quite a number of examples of the use of machine learning by government entities for these more perhaps banal reasons. For example, the city of Chicago uses a machine learning algorithm to determine where they should put rat bait out in the city to control vermin. But I think the more provocative examples are the ones where you have suggested where government could actually begin not just to inform decision making, but to substitute for human decision making, to have adjudications handled by an algorithm, to have rules established by a robot. Now, that's a scenario that hasn't been implemented widely yet, but we do see some concrete examples. One example comes from the private sector. The company eBay handles its disputes between sellers and buyers through an automated algorithmic system. And there's no human intervention at all in resolving online disputes with this algorithm that they have. And what's striking is that eBay has found that the customers who go through their algorithmic system are actually more satisfied and more likely to return to eBay than customers who never had a dispute at all. So algorithmic dispute resolution is live and well in the private sector and working with some success. So I think we're likely to see that some routinized kinds of adjudications in the public sector over disability benefits, health benefits, or so forth, that might be quite profitably computerized as well. What about making rules? Well, that's a little bit more fanciful, I suppose, but two examples that might come about perhaps in the future. For example, right now we have a human-based, rule-based system about determining who should get a pilot's license. That could perhaps be automated by an algorithm that determines the risk that a person has, maybe incorporating all of that person's training flights into an algorithm and determining their risk. Another example might be for automated rulemaking in an area where there's a need for very rapid decisions, perhaps high-speed securities markets, that government could rely on an algorithmic system to automatically set and adjust the rules for securities trading.
There's even been a paper written about the predictability of domestic violence. So, David Lear, how do you think this will play out in reality?
So we have absolutely already seen the use of machine learning to predict various aspects of criminality or when or where crimes are likely to occur. As you mentioned, there are algorithms predicting where and when domestic violence is likely to occur, and those are in turn used to target officers to areas that might be at risk. You also have algorithms engaged in predicting things like prisoner risk of violence so that prisoners can be assigned to cells, or whether an individual should be given probation or parole. What you are unlikely to see, though, is a more fanciful science fiction version of predicting crime, where from the moment that somebody is born, their likelihood of becoming a criminal is determined. And you are also unlikely to see, I think, the use of these predictions to inform punishment. We still have a well-established rule that punishment is allotted out based on crimes that have committed, not crimes that are likely to occur in the future. So I do not envision proactive punishment of crimes that have yet to occur.
Yeah, I agree with David that we're not going to have a minority report situation soon. A lot of what the criminal law does is dole out retribution. And if something hasn't occurred, it's hard to even conceptualize what retribution means. But I do think, as David said, there are areas where we could allocate social resources or make other decisions short of prosecutions and punishment. Teachers in classrooms, for example, may benefit from knowing whether there's a risk propensity for students, for example, who might benefit from counseling or other special treatment.
And in other areas of the law, it strikes me that artificial intelligence is already becoming indispensable, such as environmental crime. You mentioned overfishing in your paper, tax evasion, those sort of fields.
Yes, there are important uses for machine learning algorithms in the detection of possible regulatory violations. And we are seeing a number of regulatory agencies in the United States that are using algorithms to try to identify or flag possible cases for follow-up human investigation. Now, most regulatory agencies do not have enough human inspectors to go to every particular facility or to inspect every particular fishing boat that might be out on the waters. So there's always been some need for selecting which facilities or entities to target for human inspection. And this is a perfect application for machine learning, and it's been demonstrated to be quite effective.
Now we're going to the meat of your paper, which is these administrative principles around which you build your arguments. First, there's the problem of delegation of decisions to autonomous learning machines. In English law, this engages the rule delegatus non potest delegare. And in the States, of course, it's the concept of non-delegation. Would this be a major stumbling block, do you think?
Certainly, part of, I think, what gives some people pause about government reliance on machine learning algorithms. We have a former famous American president, Abraham Lincoln, who spoke eloquently about how government is supposed to be in a democracy of the people, for the people, and by the people. The idea that government could be by the machine certainly is striking to anyone in any democratic legal system, to be sure. But actually, machine learning algorithms are created by people. They are structured by people. They are, in some sense, programmed by people. So it's not really much different than government relying on any other kind of tool, government officials rely on thermometers and radar detectors and all sorts of other machines as well. As long as these are reasonably calibrated and tested and validated, they can be just as, I think, unproblematic as any other kind. As to the principle about delegation, there's a couple of concerns that animate that in American law, at least. One concern about delegating governmental tasks to private entities. And there, the worry typically is that a private entity will have some kind of conflict of interest with those that it is, you know, regulating or overseeing or affecting. But algorithms don't have interests. So I think in some sense, it's even more acceptable to delegate to machine learning algorithm. So from the standpoint of delegation, I think actually this is not only something that could be easy to justify, but in some sense maybe less problematic than delegations to human beings.
But I can't resist asking the question, maybe this is one for you, David, about humans having ultimate control in that they are able to, in quotes, pull the plug on the system. That's what you say in the paper. But what about the argument that the system will prove to be more intelligent and faster than we are? There'll be no time to pull the plug.
So I think this gets to the point that Carey made at the beginning of his last response, which is that at the end of the day, it's humans that design the algorithms and humans that set the parameters. So even though an algorithm may become faster and may be able to find patterns in data that humans cannot, if all of that is still done within a set of parameters set by humans, then a concern about pulling the plug is a bit in a posit. Everything is still being done within the realm of what humans specified.
So you can't envisage a future where the machine with general intelligence, as in that it's learning way beyond what its original human programmers could envisage, would actually be making decisions beyond the scope of our ability to stop it.
No, and I'm glad you brought up that term general intelligence, because I think this is a point that must be made clear about our work. We are not at all envisioning all-powerful, omniscient, omnipresent algorithms that acquire a human-like intelligence of sorts. All of the algorithms that we envision being applied to regulatory goals will operate within very constrained domains, will operate with very specified and constrained parameters. So we are not at all talking about those types of general intelligence algorithms that might cause some science fiction writers more worry.
In fact, I think that is really science fiction, quite frankly. The way algorithms work and machine learning works, they do learn on their own. They are autonomous learners, but they're learning within the kind of parameters that have been set by humans who have created them and with respect to the kind of goals that humans have specified.
I just want to read back to you one of the concluding statements in your paper. You say that agencies should increasingly seek out and engage neutral statistical experts to provide dispassionate assessments of consequential uses of algorithms. Individuals challenging an agency's deprivation of their rights or property cannot be expected to mount a sufficiently probing search for an algorithm's potential inadequacies and biases, either on their own or with the help of skilled but mathematically naive counsel. Well, this sounds like the end of jobs for traditionally trained lawyers, doesn't it?
Well, as someone who teaches on the faculty of a law school, I certainly, have it in my interest to say I hope not. But I really don't think it will. There will still be need for traditional lawyers, but there will be a new need for additional professionals or for lawyers who actually come to their tasks with a greater degree of mathematical sophistication and understanding. I should be clear that we can't imagine that machine learning systems will replace all of the legal system, just that there will be certain tasks, certain relatively routinized adjudicatory functions or situations that give rise to a need for very fast rulemaking, where regulating by robot or adjudicating by algorithm would be handy. Here in the States, we had a very famous criminal law trial some years ago about O.J. Simpson. We have another one in the news about comedian Bill Cosby. Any of these major trials are not going to be automated by algorithm because they are, as we say in the law, sui generis, where there's very specific involved detailed, in-depth, and original circumstances that arise, lawyers will be needed. But this is really, to be honest, not anything different than what we see in a variety of areas. Tax used to be a major area of legal practice, and accountants now perform a lot of functions that lawyers in years past used to undertake. I know in my own field of environmental law that has become so routinized in many respects that tasks that lawyers used to handle are now handled by environmental consulting firms. And this is really the trend that we would see going forward, that there will be a niche and a need for experts who can interrogate algorithms and have the degree of mathematical sophistication to do that. But there will also be plenty of tasks still for traditional lawyers.
I imagine that your field, environmental law, is par excellence an area of law where the technical support of machine learning will actually make adjudication fairer rather than less fair.
That's actually the vision that we want to communicate to people. Right now, we do have a government by algorithm. It's just human algorithms. The way our brains are structured is algorithmic itself. And the way we structure law to be formulaic and rule-like is all a type of algorithm, too. Human algorithms are not without their flaws. And if we can find ways in which machine learning algorithms can substitute for humans and deliver better, fairer, less biased, more accurate decision making, we should embrace that and not walk away from it just because it seems different or unusual or somehow foreign to us that we could have a government operating important functions by robot. But really, we should embrace that when it can be demonstrated that this achieves superior outcomes to human algorithms.
I would like to elaborate a bit on a point that Carrie made earlier about having less biased outcomes through the use of algorithms as well. Discriminatory outcomes or disparate impacts of algorithms is absolutely a real concern. We've seen well-documented evidence that when algorithms are trained on data sets that have baked into them human biases, that discriminatory outcomes can result. We've also seen that some algorithms just do not perform well on certain classes of individuals where they do on others. But there are two important notes to keep in mind, two constructive notes to keep in mind. One is that we should evaluate algorithms in comparison to the status quo. We all know how humans can have biases that manifest themselves in a variety of ways, and it can often be difficult to probe where those biases result or how to fix them when they are human biases. But if the biases are algorithmic biases, there at least exist ways to probe the algorithm and see where those biases are occurring. And then to lead to my second point, there even are ways to perhaps mitigate those disparate impacts. Statisticians are increasingly working with to modify the results and the processes of algorithms to result in less discriminatory outcomes. So I think that's an additional constructive note to end on.
Thank you very much, both Carrie and David, for coming on the podcast to discuss this fascinating subject. And we'll see whether some of your predictions are realized in the near future.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.